C1AP. Number 4B.
We come to the next message, life, to the church in Smyrna. Again, you can hear the tone of life very quickly. These things, there's the first and the last. Can you hear again? The first and the last, which was dead and is alive. Well, this is certainly the timelessness of business. First and the last, yeah, life. He says, I know your tribulation, I know thy poverty, but thou art rich. Life is always full. Though they think they are poor, life says, I know that you are rich. Life always says, I'm the fullness of life, and ever you can take the fullness of life whenever you want, even if you don't accept it and think that you are poor. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee the crown of life. Well, it's unmistakable that this is the tone of life. But he says that he has something against them, namely that they say they are Jews and are not. They identify themselves falsely. They have a false sense of individuality and do not acknowledge their true individuality. So he says, only he that overcometh shall not be hurt of the second death. He who accepts his true individuality, his oneness with life, and sees that he has no other life but that life which is God, he will not be touched by the second death. What is the... Well, we come afterwards to the first and second death. The first death, naturally, is the belief that we have a mortal existence, that life is in matter, and that we will die in matter, and that somehow we should get out of that belief of dying in matter. But the second death is something else. The second death is the destruction of the belief in mortality. It's the destruction that there can be mortality at all. That is the second death. If we overcome that, then we have overcome also the first death and the first birth, both. So he's showing here really life, and says, well, there is the infinite individuality of life, which is eternal, which is timeless, which is spaceless, which is the fullness of life, and therefore accept that fullness of life and don't reject it and say, I'm not a Jew, when you are a Jew. Don't reject your individuality. Stick to your true individuality. Then that will help you to overcome the second death. We come to truth. And here again we see it very quickly that it has to do with truth, because he speaks of he which has a sharp sword with two edges. Well, we know from the textbook that Mrs. Eddy talks about the sword of truth, the two-edged sword of truth. He says, I know where thou dwellest. Truth always is consciousness. Truth always knows our consciousness. Truth is the consciousness that knows exactly, and therefore is a two-edged sword which can distinguish exactly what is truth and what is error. The consciousness of truth is a two-edged sword. It can really detect the erroneous consciousness. But he says, I have something against thee, and what he has against them is actually that they do not have that sword of truth with which they can distinguish what is helping them. Because he tells them that in Pergamos they were worshipping the Aesculapius medicine. They were, that it is the city where Satan dwelleth, where erroneous consciousness dwelleth. They hold the doctrine of Baal, false sense of theology. So he brings out really the false sense of truth and Savior. says, you think that medicine and theology are a true savior, whereas there is only one savior, and that is the consciousness of truth. So he tells them to overcome that. To him that overcometh, I will give to eat of the hidden manna. I will give him a white stone. Wonderful. Can you see? I will give him a white stone. Again, the moment we have a stone, we come to that calculus and say, if your consciousness are separating itself from the false saviors of medicine and theology and stick just to the one truth where you dwellest, to the truth consciousness, to the Christ consciousness, then within you, you will find your true manhood, your individual manhood, the stone, a white stone. In the stone, a new name written, which no man knoweth, saving he that receiveth it. God, is that wonderful? Can you see that only the individual can know what he is? Each one of us must know what he is. The other fellow doesn't know what you are. Only he which entertains within himself the truth consciousness knows that he has a new name. And the new name written on that white stone. White is the purity of that white stone. So that each one has an individual consciousness, an individual manhood. And only he can know it. Well, it would be wonderful to remember that we are not constantly evaluating the other fellow, how much of a man he is and how much of science he reflects and so on. We don't know what's going on in him. The very thing that we have to know is that we know who I am. Am I man as truth's own consciousness? That is the big question. Have I a white stone with the name of God written on it? And this is always the big thing. So that we could say, never forget who you are. Go home and never forget in your life anymore who you are. That you stick to your divine, individual consciousness of truth. That's manhood. That was one of my first lessons I learned, not in the Sunday school. I haven't learned anything in the Sunday school. But I had a wonderful mother. Wonderful mother. She had no schooling. She had only a few years in a little village way back, you know, in the last century. But she was wise. And she always told me that. She said, well, I can't say it how it sounds in German. She said, Maxley, never forget who you are. I thought, this is a wonderful teaching. That teaching of Pergamos. Never forget who you are. Because the world says you are rotten. The world criticizes. The world says you don't live Christian Science. The world says you don't know Christian Science. The world says all sorts about you. The world says it. What does truth say about it? And that's only the individual who can know it. Huh? Only the individual can know it. And he must stick to it. Then he gets a new name. Man is his new name. And that's something else than what we'll see later on, 666, the false name of man, of a mortal. We come to the next one of love, the Church of Thyatira. And you see again here very quickly that it has to do with the tone of love. Namely, he speaks of he who has his eyes like unto a flame of fire. Can you hear that love chastens? Love wants to purify even the gold of human character. Because even the gold of human character has to be purified until it is the gold of the divine character. Not even the gold of human character is good enough. So love says, I know thy charity, service, faith, patient works, at the last to be more than the first, but I have something against thee. He says, thou sufferest that woman Jezebel. Jezebel was introducing the worship of Baal into Israel. Therefore, Jezebel was always anathema for the Israelites. She was the symbol for the counterfeit of true womanhood. She seduces my servants to commit fornication. Actually, what he meant, fornication in the spiritual, really mixing up wrong, the right sense of God with the wrong sense of God, with spiritual sense of God and idea of God, with all the various gods of the surrounding countries, and she repented not. So I will kill her children with death. But he that overcometh, I will give power over all nations. Now you get the terrific sense of the universality of love. That if we have a motherhood sense, our true woman sense, that we'll see then in the great vision of love, when we come to the great vision of love, it's all about the God-crowned woman. There the true woman comes up again. That gives a universal sense of dominion. I will give power over the nations. He shall rule them with a rod of iron. Love will rule with the rod of truth. I will give him the morning star. Mrs. Eddy calls the morning star divine science. Love is always that synonymous term which introduces divine science. So we can see that what he is saying, that the divine sense of motherhood, of love, the true sense of womanhood, of love, is that which must overcome within us the Jezebel state of thought, the false woman sense. That sense that does not want to serve the idea, that does not want constantly to hedge the idea, to protect the idea, to give everything to that idea, to put that idea first and foremost. If that is not there, we are Jezebel. We have divided interests. We have divided aims. We give a little bit to Christian Science and a little bit to other things. We are not always putting first things first. Then we are Jezebel. That's fornication, that's abomination in the spiritual. It demands that wonderful woman sets that gives everything to the idea, that does not count the cost for serving the idea. Only in that way we really can overcome the Jezebel within us, but what we gain is actually divine science, that universal sense of divine science. We come to the next message to the church in Sardis, which symbolizes soul. Again, you see that very quickly, if one knows a little bit the symbolism of the Bible. It is he that has the seven spirits of God, the seven synonymous term of God, and the seven stars, the seven numerals of infinity. Now, what is soul in that thing? Soul in that thing is that one sees the identity of the seven synonymous terms with the numerals of infinity and the 7 days of creation, that they are not two things, which is naturally the most important point in the Christ translation at the point of soul, which says, on the translation You don't lose anything if principle translates itself to a situation, to an individual situation. The whole identity of the seventh synonymous term, or the wholeness of God, is translated to the point of idea. The idea is not a little part of the whole. It's always in quality identical with the whole. Therefore, we can see that wherever really God translates itself, or principle translates itself to the point of idea, so says in that translation, the idea will bring out the whole of God, and not only a part of God. We can never split up the whole into parts. And that's when you know the Christ translation, the main point of soul, that it maintains the identity of the seventh synonymous term and says, even if that is shown as idea, it is not a part, but the whole qualitatively. But he says, I have something against you, namely, that thou hast a name. The moment we have name, usually has to do with identity, that thou livest and art dead. That thou livest and art dead. They were not watching. He was telling them that they were not watching, that they could have the life of being, namely the seventh synonymous term, but they are not using them, that they are not translating this seventh synonymous term to a living experience. And so those seventh synonymous terms are dead to you. That's what he said. He more or less said, well, you believe in the seventh synonymous term, and you study the seventh synonymous term, but you can't see that you should watch your consciousness so that your consciousness is identical with those seventh synonymous terms. Then the ideas of the seventh synonymous term become your name, become you, your identity. So he says, he that overcometh shall be clothed in white raiment. And, now comes the tone of soul, I will not blot out his name out of the book of life. Can you see? The moment you are watching and you begin to see the living sense of the seven as the seven stars, not only as the seven synonymous term, but as the seven stars, namely as your consciousness, then you have a name that cannot be blotted out of the book of life. Then that lives, and you are no more dead. I will confess his name, again name, can you see, soul, before my Father and before his angels, so that our name is written in heaven. Can you see the beauty of it? Huh? And can you see the tone of it? That you don't make up these things. That if we know the symbolism from the Old Testament and from the apocalyptical writings of the Old Testament, and we can see the story in here. And it's a story that is our story of today. But then comes that beautiful sixth message to Philadelphia spirit. And you watch that. You know, that sixth message has nothing to reproach. That seems to be out of symmetry, so to say, of the presentation. But it has a very good reason. Or I would even say it must be that way, or the whole of Revelation is not balanced. And perhaps we will remind ourselves when we then go through the vision of Spirit. Here it's the message of Spirit. When we go through the vision of Spirit, it's the only vision where there is no error either. And it comes to the vision of spirit way back then in chapter 19 to 21. There is no error to handle, to deal with. Because after all, there should come a day where we have a rest, where we should not constantly quarrel with evil. But to work out that, that's another question that takes all the visions in the book of Revelation. So at this moment, we just make a mental note that already here it is pre-programmed into the whole of Revelation that the message of spirit has no counterfeit, has nothing to overcome. It's so pure that only the true idea works. But look at the beauty of it. Even if we don't know yet what is going to happen later on in Revelation, we still know that in the vision of spirit is the vision of the four-sided city, the city four square, the city of spirit. Now look here what he says to the church in Philadelphia. He that is holy, he that is true, he that has the key of David, he that openeth, and no man shutteth, and he that shutteth, and no man openeth. Isn't that terrific? This terrific order of spirit, which says, if spirit opens something once, it cannot be reversed anymore. It's the term, it cannot fall back, cannot retrograde anymore. You open and it's open and you can no more shut it. It's like learning to drive a bicycle. If once you have learned to drive a bicycle, you will always know it. You cannot unlearn it. If the spirit is the same, once one has seen something spiritually, it never leaves us again. That cannot be wiped out. Only if we have not understood something spiritually and have only believed in something spiritual, we can lose it again. Therefore, belief and faith are not good enough. But once we have understood something in the spiritual way, it's substance, and that substance cannot be wiped out again. And if we have overcome an error, and we have shut up an error, it's shut up forever. And no man can open it again. No man can make it come back again if he solves it spiritually. I have set before thee an open door. An open door. And no man can shut it. I will keep thee from the hour of temptation which shall come upon all the world. Keep it from the hour of temptation. Temptation cannot touch us anymore. Can you see the purity of spirit that is brought out here? That there is no more any chance for evil to touch us once we have seen the purity of spirit. And then he says, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God. I will write on him the name of my God. Can you see again? To write the name of my God. Ye are a calculus. Ye are the divine infinite calculus. That's the name of God. And the name of... Oh, sorry, here it comes. And the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem. That's our new name. Do you know what he says? That we have a new name. That new name is called the New Jerusalem, the city of our God. What is the city of our God? The operation of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science within us. That's our new form. That's our new gestalt of manhood. That we are a calculus of idea, and not a mortal that has to work out of mortality into something that is above mortality. which comes down out of heaven from my God. So that's the message of Spirit. Isn't that wonderful? And that we'll see when we come to the vision of Spirit. There he will show us the new city, and that there is no temple therein in the old sense, but that God and the Lamb will be the temple of it. We will be a pillar in that temple. It's amazing. But naturally, one can see this is only nearly a prelude of what afterwards is shown in more detail, running right through the seven visions. Then we come to the last message, mine, to the church in Laodicea. And here he says, he that is a true witness. Again, we have mind as the witness, just as we heard it in the first chapter. When he speaks about mind, it's the witness. He that knows. He that is the beginning of the creation of God. We know that the beginning of creation of God is mind. The mind is the creator. So you get a very good sense of mind as a true witness, mind that knows and is the creative activity. But I have something against you. What has he against it? What has he against that we should not accept the preceding message to be the city of God? That the only thing that keeps you away from it is that you do not accept it. And it gives you a sense that we should accept it with all our heart and soul. Namely, I have against it that thou art neither cold nor hot, that thou art lukewarm, that there is no consecration there, no persistence there, no wholeheartedness there, no earnestness there, no determination there, no consecration there, that there is no commitment there. That he has against it. It says all that keeps you away from being the city of God is that you have no commitment to the idea. Thou art lukewarm, and I will spew thee out of my mouth. I remember John Dolly said in a class, when I went through class, he said, make up your mind. Are you going to be hot or cold? I don't mind hot or cold. So, I don't mind if you are hot or cold, but never be lukewarm. I spew thee out. And you see that in the life of Christian Scientists, we can't play with this idea. If somebody is not hot or cold, he will be spewed out. Don't make any mistake. He will be spewed out. It's good to be hot, that's fine. It's good to be cold and go away and make the experience. Until one can see it. But lukewarm, that's terrible. That's terrible. And it will spew thee out. Buy of me, he says, gold tried in the fire. See, gold tried in the fire. You're seeking your consecrated sense. White raiment for clothing. Anoint thy eyes that thou mayest see. Get understanding with all our understanding. Get understanding. That's what he wants to say. Accept what you have. Put everything into it. Go and seek it and strive for it and get it and put everything into it and don't count the price. Go forward. Then you get somewhere. Because I stand at the door and knock, and I will open the door and I will let him in. If he knock, the door will be opened. And he can sit with me in my throne. Isn't that beautiful? Okay.